Hey everyone, Matt Lieb here, co-host of Pod Yourself a Gun. Just before we get this episode started, I just wanted to briefly ask you if you wouldn't mind going to the podcast app and leaving us 5 stars and writing a review. Every time you do that, every time we get a review or some stars, more people will have a chance to see the podcast in the podcast store. So help us game the algorithm by leaving a review and giving us 5 stars. If you love this podcast, you know, it's free. You know, we do it out of the goodness of our hearts. We do it because we love you. We do it because we love The Sopranos. So please help us out a little bit and give us some stars and a review and tell your friends about it too. That would be sick too. Whatever you really want to do, just do it. But yeah, just wanted to say that before we get this episode started. And now it is time for your new episode of Pod Yourself a Gun. This week, our guest is Nando Vila.
Here we go. Here comes the Prozac.
Hi, I'm Matt Lieb.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Pod Yourself a Gun, a Sopranos podcast where me and Vince Mancini go through every single episode of The Sopranos and talk about it. The most original idea in podcasting ever. How you doing, Vince?
Oh, I'm doing great. Holding on to my sanity. I'm drinking wine. It helps.
Yeah. While you're sheltering in place, taking care of the fam, you might as well get drunk doing it. It's a good time.
Yeah.
Today, our guest is, you know him from TYT and also a new Entourage rewatch podcast called Let's Pod It Out. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Nando Vila. How you doing, Nando?
I'm doing great. I'm just, I'm happy to be on this very original podcast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I have my own very original podcast.
That's the thing.
Matt,
it's like
told you how to pronounce his name like 5 minutes ago, and you still fucked it up.
Wait, I said Vila.
It's Vila. He just said Vila, like Bob Vila.
Oh, Vila, Vila, Vila. I'm
Vila's
sorry.
Vila's close enough.
God damn it. Close enough. Listen, never claimed to be good at podcasting. I only ever claimed to be original at it and come up with original ideas, like watching The Sopranos and talking about every episode.
No one's ever heard of this show.
No one has ever heard of The Sopranos.
The cast members are not even doing podcasts.
No, why would they?
Not a single one.
God damn it. People keep tweeting at me like, oh my God, have you guys heard about this? It's Michael Imperioli and Dave, and what's his name? Steve Sharipa.
Yeah.
Did I get his name right? Sharipa?
Sharipa.
Close enough.
Yeah. Sharipa? Fucking who cares? Point is they're doing it, and I keep having to be like, I know, but I've listened to a little bit of it, and I'm just like, not one word about titties. And that's what we talk. This show is mostly a show about, like, titties.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're the only Sopranos podcast that talks about it.
Yeah. I mean, I've begged Matt 100 times not to say the word titties in the first 5 minutes, but he always finds a way to squeeze it in there.
We got to have our edge, dude. That's why true. The hell would you start a Sopranos podcast, which is HBO, Prestige TV, which, like, the whole reason you watch Prestige TV is titties. Why would you start that kind of podcast and be like, oh, I'm gonna make it PG? Nah,
that's true. Yeah, well, you're right.
Also, like, Sopranos is, like, famously, right, like, the anti-hero, right? Like, America's first, like, you know, we fell in love with the anti-hero.
Yeah.
You got to be the anti-hero of the podcast. You got to say edgy shit. You got to do bad shit. You got to kill people. You got to say titties.
Exactly.
And that way the audience will love you.
Exactly. Yeah. The audience that listens to Sopranos doesn't want to listen to a podcast with a bunch of really, like, detached people trying to keep it PG, talking about their family. Nah, they want to hear about murder and titties. That's what we offer them.
Yeah.
And they also want to hear our lovely theme song. Pod. 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 Podcast. Pod. 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 Podcast. Oh, that is just
You know, I've always wondered whether that was done live or whether that was a pre-tape. I know all the fans of the show have been asking themselves the same question on the Reddit threads and all that stuff. Did they do the theme song live or no?
Yeah. Do they just mute every time it says got? Every time. I think it speaks to the quality of the remix that people are like, oh, he must be doing that live, because there's no way he would have made it so crappy and reused it over and over again. But that's the thing. This podcast is about, you know, fucking life giving you lemon and making fucking lemonades, dude. That's what it's, I've just decided that's what it's about.
That's right. That's Matt, what episode are we talking today?
Today, we are talking about from season 2, episode 10, Bust Out, which a fantastic episode. Vince, when did this episode come out?
This came out March 19th in the year 2000.
Way back in the year 2000, which I've never done before, and I wish I had a recording of it so that we could use a clip, but instead, nah, fuck that. I just sang it. What was happening around that time? Before we get into the episode, we'd like to talk about what was happening in America and in the world around the time of the premiere of the episode.
Cultural context to understand cultural the Sopranos. Context. It didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened at a specific time in history, and that's the context for it.
Yeah, so let's take a little trip back into the Wayback Machine.
Yeah, so March 19th, 2000, headlines. I cut down the headlines because Matt gave me crap about including too many last time. There also wasn't that many great headlines on this day, but one of them was that acting President Vladimir Putin expected to win next Sunday's presidential election. So he is 1 week away from his first actual election. He was appointed, handpicked by Boris Yeltsin back in October, and he's going to win his first of, I don't know, 17 elections. How many elections did he? I don't think they hold them anymore.
I mean,
he had it like that. So he won two terms, and then he couldn't run again for a third. So he put his like number two guy.
Yeah, Medvedev.
He won two elections. Yeah. And then he came back.
Yeah.
Oh man, I love that. You know, it's like it's kind of like Obama. You know, tapping Biden. you know, it was just like, well, here's the deal, Medvedev. You're gonna be the president, but I. I'm going to be the prime minister.
We should be so lucky if we had a Medvedev. The top movies were...
At least Medvedev was electable and could complete a sentence.
At least he could speak.
At least. Oh, God.
I haven't heard him speak anything. At least
we don't know. As far as we know, he doesn't have any sexual assault allegations against him.
Yeah, as far as we know. Although, without the allegations, I think it's safe to say that most Russian politicians are, what do you call it, bad.
Top movies, Aaron Brockovich, Mission to Mars, and Final Destination. Aaron Brockovich and Final Destination were both opening.
Was Mission to Mars that Jerry O'Connell movie?
That's a great question.
God, who was in that? I feel like we discussed that I think it was Jerry O'Connell. I forgot already.
Was Ice Cube in that? Am I thinking
they snakes out there this big?
Yeah. God damn, there's a lot of Martians.
It was Jerry O'Connell. Gary Sinise.
Gary Sinise is in this?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm thinking of Ghosts of Mars.
Yeah, Gary Sinise, Don Cheadle, Connie Nielsen, Jerry O'Connell, Tim Robbins.
Mm-hmm. I remember that movie. Final Destination is actually kind of good.
That's a dope-ass movie. Yeah. It's one of those
Devin
movies.
Devin Sawa. He follows me on Twitter.
He does?
Very excited about that, yeah.
That is pretty fucking cool. He was like one of those guys. He was like at the tail end of like the Tiger Beat generation.
Yeah, YM.
Of girls. Yeah. Like,
it was
you
like
know.
Him, Andrew Keegan.
Yeah.
JTT.
He and Jonathan Brandis are like almost the same guy in my mind. So every time
RIP.
Yeah, every time Devin Sawa's alive, I'm like, oh yeah, they're different. Dang it. They're like fucking Tom Hardy and the other guy who looks kind of like Tom Hardy of their generation.
Yeah, or like Matt Damon and the fat version of Matt Damon.
Or like
who's in Fargo.
What's his name? Johnny Depp and Skeet Ulrich.
Yeah.
Yes.
Elizabeth Debicki and the other chick who looks exactly like her from Masters of Sex, whose name I forget. Anyway,
Deep Impact, Armageddon,
exciting.
Gotcha.
Yeah, very exciting. the top song, same as last week, Say My Name, Destiny's Child, How Do You Like Me Now, Toby Keith, Other Side, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, man.
Not a great year for music, I would say.
It's the worst. That era was the worst.
Yeah.
The Californication album was, I remember, kind of good. I remember enjoying it.
No.
No? I think it gets a lot of shit. People give like late Red Hot Chili Peppers a lot of shit for not being early Red Hot Chili Peppers. But have you heard early Red Hot Chili Peppers?
It's unlistenable.
They fucking suck. Yeah. It is like some of the worst music.
I mean, you're wrong. They had two good albums. They had Mother's Milk and Blood Sugar Sex Magik. And the rest is pretty much trash.
But the early, like the 80s stuff, like the Hillel Slovak stuff. No good.
Yeah, yeah. They're just I don't know. It just felt like trash. But I'm often wrong.
And that era of music, just in general, was just dog shit.
Yeah, like no, the
99 to 2005,
this
more
is,
or less.
Oh, my God.
This is
yeah.
the, in terms of rock, you're in your mid new metal, where everybody was middle class and white and angry at their mom.
Hell yeah.
And in rap, it was like it was still a bit of like a No Limit hangover. And No Limit was like by far the worst. The Master P era was the worst rap era by far.
Yeah, that's pretty bad. But
except for Mystical. Mystical was cool.
Yeah, but I mean, listen, the fact that nu metal was still a big deal around then, I mean, you have to give the era credit because no music has ever topped nu metal in terms of originality, in terms of mashing up genres, in terms of wearing Halloween costumes year round.
Yeah. In terms of like, having an umlaut in the genre name.
Yeah, you gotta. Back then. Everyone had an umlaut.
I think Lemmy started that in the 80s, but...
That's true.
Well, that was in the band name.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But umlaut? Or is the two periods over the O, is it an umlaut or a diéresis?
I think that's an umlaut. I mean,
I thought that's an umlaut.
So. I'm not a German speaker.
Umlaut, ba, ba, do, laut. All right.
Well, we've gone off the rails, so let's...
let's talk about Sopranos.
Yeah, so a synopsis. Again, this one's called Bust Out. Episode synopsis straight from HBO to your ears. Richie meets with Tony to complain about his end of the garbage business, then meets with Junior to complain about Tony. Later, Tony orchestrates the planned bankruptcy of David Scatino's sporting goods store, while Scatino's wife introduces Carmela to her handsome widowed brother.
Beautiful read, Vince. Yeah, thank you so much. Uh-huh. So real quick, let's just get through some of these Butta Bee stories. So this episode is called Bust Out, and I submit that this is an episode almost entirely about busting. And I mean that in every single way. So Butta Bee stories are Davey gets busted out. Tony almost gets busted by the FBI. Carm busts in bed, and Richie needs to bust a cap in Janice to bust, but can't bust a cap in a capo.
Why don't you write a rap song about that?
Yeah, bust a cap in a capo. I'm busting a cap over here. So stupid. So those are the basic storylines, and I think first and foremost, we start out with the return of David David Scatino.
What are you doing up there?
I'm fixing a fucking light bulb, that's all. It glares off the one ball when I rack.
Yeah,
that's so good.
It's, yes, as you know, Davey is, the actor who plays Davey also famously played the T-1000. Am I right about that, or did I just make that
Yeah,
up?
No, you did not
no,
make
you're
that
right.
up.
I figured that he's got one of those faces.
If you know one thing about Robert Patrick, it's that he played the T-1000 in Terminator 2.
Yeah, it's the way he runs.
It's exactly. It's unfortunate that you don't see him running a lot in this
series. He's a good actor. Like, everything I've seen him in, I'm like, I like that guy.
Yeah.
He's great in this episode.
Yeah, he is. He is fantastic. And in general, like, his storyline throughout this season is really, really good. I mean,
there's nothing more embarrassing than getting interrupted by your wife when you're right about to kill yourself. It's even worse than getting caught jerking off. It's like, Mom, trying to kill myself in here. God.
Especially because he's doing it like in his man cave on top of his pool table. He's like sprawled out of his pool table. Like, he hides his guns and his man stuff.
Sorry, I was just blowing into this N64 cartridge to get Mario Kart to work. But yeah, it's definitely like the character itself is like is a really interesting one because of the fact that you've got him basically being someone who grew up with Tony Soprano and ends up being victimized by him. And in this episode, what I love in particular is the fact that he is now mid being busted out. So basically, Tony and his crew have been destroying his business by destroying his credit. They're like ordering plane tickets under his name. They're like at one point it seems like the things they're ordering, they start getting weird.
One of the things is the pettiness of the mafia and like the small time nature of it, where it's like a very unsophisticated scam and like they're doing it to just nickel and dime.
Right. If there were any, if they were smart,
coolers, and Richie only says he only wants the red ones because no one buys the blue ones. It's like, yeah, you give them to a Nigerian guy on the street. He sells them for $3 a pop. It's like, that's your scheme? Like, how many of those can you sell on the street?
Especially, like, imagine busting out someone with good credit and just being like, no, I'm not going to use this as an opportunity to make real money. I'm going to use it as an opportunity to basically steal water and coolers.
Right.
So the other thing that they order is a bunch of Remlosa sparkly water. And what is great is that the red coolers and Remlosa show up throughout the episode.
Right.
You just see kind of like everyone who wets their beak in this kind of like mob economy. So at one point,
it's
Carmella,
really a brilliant metaphor for wetting your beak. You actually use the sparkle.
You're literally wetting your beak with sparkle water. And Davey is particularly sad in this episode because he is being busted out and losing everything, and yet continues to blame everyone for the position that he has put himself in.
Yeah. So I feel like this is the first Sopranos episode that really got into the mechanisms of a scam. Like, I think this I like this episode because it reminds me, it's the Sopranos episode that reminds me most of The Wire, because it details how the scam works, who benefits from it, like the ripple effects, and what it goes through. It's like, who's benefiting from this, who's affected by it, and what are the ultimate consequences of it, and it just sort of shows how this corruption like ripples out into this social circle. But like in The Wire, it's very much it's like about government and drugs and stuff, and it's this very like big picture thing. Whereas
it's anthropological.
Like, yes.
It's like every season you're kind of like learning about a different facet within society that either wins or loses due to the drug trade. And like The Sopranos doesn't really take
this
that
is
much
that,
of a big picture.
This is that for 15 Scumbags in New Jersey, which is great.
Right.
Yeah. Like, you know, because the thing about it is, like, you know, they're ruining this guy's life. Like, they're absolutely, this guy's about to kill himself. You know, like they're ruining his life. And, like, for what? Like, how much money are they making off of selling these coolers on street corners or giving Vesuvio's a good deal on the sparkling water?
You know? It's, and the attitude in general that they have towards busting out Davey, or at least that Tony shows, is that it's like no big deal. And I think a lot of that has to do with the other B story about the fact that Tony's worried about the fact that he might be busted by the FBI. So he's kind of like, listen, after all this is done and you declare planned bankruptcy, you're good. You can do whatever the fuck you want with your life. You're not in a cage.
In that scene, it's amazing. Like, it's almost like Tony's like offended that David is like sad or pissed off.
Right.
He's like, what do you mean? This is how I make my living. Guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
right.
It's very.
What do you expect me to do?
You want to deprive me of my living? You want to take food out of my children's mouths? It's just like, he's completely sociopathic about
it. It's very much that screen cap from Buster Scruggs with James Franco with the noose around his neck, and he's saying, "Hey, first time."
Seriously.
I mean, if we could just describe how busting out actually works. I mean, it's like, it's complicated, but it's also incredibly simple. Like, you just, you just run a, you have a line of credit and you buy things on it and then you sell those things and then you declare
with Nigerians on the street corner.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And then you just declare bankruptcy. And so like it can be very complicated, but like in this case it's like, oh no, they literally used it to buy coolers and plane tickets and a bunch
AJ
of
a fishing rod that he couldn't get yeah. for right. Christmas last year.
Yeah, it's so funny because of the fact that they think so small. Like you imagine someone competent with an open line of credit that they're going to use to basically just bankrupt, and you could make some serious money, but actually selling coolers is such a meathead Jersey thing that you almost respect it. You respect the fact that they're keeping the hustle difficult.
Right. I mean, on like, a larger scale, like this is the same as how private equity works, basically. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's...
But they're
also,
good at it.
Yeah, well, so private equity, they just, you know, you have your private equity company. You go and you borrow money... to buy a company, but you actually mm-hmm. borrow money from that company to buy that company, and
yeah,
then
right.
you run up a bunch of credit on that company, and now all the debt, it belongs to that company. Like it doesn't belong to your company, it somehow belongs to them. So basically like the mm-hmm. mafia is doing exactly what a private equity enterprise does. And there's also I think it's season 3 of Fargo. That's basically just an entire like busting out scam with the guy from Anomalisa with his bad teeth.
Basically invented by Mitt Romney.
Oh, yeah. Like
Mitt Romney is the pioneer of the private equity industry in the United States when he proposed that to Bain and then created Bain Capital. That was like the first big private equity company.
He's such a nice Mormon businessman.
He's such a nice Mormon, but he's basically Tony Soprano.
Yeah. You mean future president, because he's a good Republican, Mitt Romney actually invented a mafioso scam? That's insane. By the way, we all know that Mitt Romney, when he runs for president, is going to win now, right? We understand this, that
I mean,
libs are going
to be honest,
switch
I think
over.
Vince McMahon's going to be the next president.
No, you might be right. If we're lucky, it'll be Mitt Romney.
If you gave me a choice between Mitt Romney and Joe Biden as the Democratic nominee,
I know.
I might pick Mitt Romney. Like his ideas are like slightly more progressive than Joe Biden.
In a way, yeah. I can see what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is that Mitt Romney is cogent. And where we might have lucked out is that Joe Biden, his brain don't work so good. And he'll read anything that a teleprompter says. He's Ron Burgundy. Right. So we might be able to like just edit, like add Medicare for All to his teleprompter. And then all of a sudden, you know,
the only reason why the Trump presidency has not been as damaging as the Bush presidency was because he's a doddering fool and doesn't have the follow through to do anything and can't really accomplish anything. Whereas like the Bush administration, he himself was an idiot, but the administration was full of like ruthless psychopaths.
So it all depends on who surrounds him. And anyways, but that's not Sopranos.
No.
And we only talk about the Sopranos on
Trump
this
is like Junior Soprano.
No, but he is AJ.
yeah, he really is.
Trump is very much AJ Soprano. He's just like watching his dad, who's like an actual good businessman. He's like, his dad is not afraid to get his hands dirty, and yet he himself, like, Trump's afraid to kill a spider by the pool.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. He's definitely.
I think if he swam in it, it would be with his shirt on.
Oh, yeah.
And by the way,
with a full suit on.
Yeah. And by the way, one of the underrated things about The Sopranos is I feel like when they cast AJ, they got like a perfect body match for Tony.
Incredible.
Like,
mm-hmm.
Robert Eiler's body looks exactly like what you would imagine Tony's looked like at that age.
Yeah. You do wonder if Robert Eiler a little bit was just like, you're not going to cast me as a young Tony Soprano.
Right.
I've been waiting.
Yeah.
I've been waiting. I'm now the age that he's the perfect age to play that. And now I think he's like a professional poker player or something. So good on him.
Yeah. He's like thin now, which, by the way, I feel like it is an underrated aspect of child abuse to get like hire a 13-year-old and just like film him with his shirt off around the pool. Like, can you imagine if that was mm-hmm. your life? Like
you become like Philip Seymour Hoffman in Along Came Polly.
I need to see that movie. I need to see that movie.
Was he a child actor in that?
Yeah, he was like a child star, and he's been like kind of traumatized, but also living off of that reputation his whole life.
Oh yeah,
nice.
I mean, yeah, like it captures your most awkward years on camera and just like preserves them forever. And like you're basically forever. Compared to your, imagine being compared to your 13-year-old self for your whole life. Holy shit!
I know. Especially if like, because like, what is the one perk of being like a child actor or an actor in general? Is that random people you've never met want to have sex with you.
Yeah.
And now you have to imagine the fact that like the only people who want to have sex with Robert Eiler are people who looked at 13-year-old Anthony Jr. and was just like, I just want to motorboat those 13-year-old titties. And like that's not, nobody wants, I mean, Robert probably wouldn't be into that. But if you are Robert, please come on Pod Yourself a Gun. We'll talk about it.
Yeah. So Tony, the interesting thing about this episode is that, you know, they're basically destroying David Scatino's life in order to get, I don't know, 10 grand maybe. Yeah. And the whole time, I love Tony's relationship to David Scatino, because the whole time he's like trying to be nice to him, and he's actually he's like weirdly tender to Davey Scatino, and you know, I have my favorite
as he's driving him to suicide,
right?
But as soon as David Scatino tries to reciprocate and like commiserate with him, Tony's like, no, don't you fucking do that.
Don't
you fucking reminisce with me. Don't you fucking dare. Like, I get to be that guy. You can't be that guy.
I'm trying to be magnanimous right now, and you're fucking cramping my style.
Favorite clip, which is basically, you know, it illustrates the duality of Tony in this episode, and it's got a little bit of Furio in the beginning, not understanding the cultural minutiae of America, where they tell him he's going to go to Elvis country, and he doesn't understand what Elvis country is.
What is that?
Anyway, there are no Jews or Italians.
I don't get it.
It's starting. It's fucking starting.
Get back in your office, David.
I'm opening my mail, and it's a lawsuit. It's a fucking lien on the building. They're going to close me down.
Davey, not fucking now, okay?
They're going to know after this that it's fraud. How am I going to jail for this?
Get the fuck back in your fucking hole! Now! Davey. You're doing a good job.
There's an amazing little line Furio before that, when you know, because Tony's in trouble, like he might have to go on the run. Furio goes to him. He goes, Tony, maybe you got to go lamb chop now for a little bit.
And he's
I'm like, did he mean like go on the lamb? And he just like, misunderstood that expression.
He doesn't understand. Yeah, he doesn't understand the expression.
Maybe go lamb chop.
Which, to be fair, I don't understand.
I don't understand it either. But
That's one of a few different malapropisms in this. I think it's that one and Elvis country. Yeah. But
That's a malapropism.
No, I guess not.
That's a good apropism.
Yeah. That is a correct apropism.
That's a bon apropism.
Bon aprop. So the fact that he wants to let him know he's doing a good job is just like, oh, maybe I've been too hard on this guy.
You're doing a great job letting us fuck you over. But, you know, David Scatino could get back on his feet. He's not going to be able to get a loan from a legitimate bank after this, but he might be able to get a mafia loan, for a new sporting goods store.
I mean, I've always thought to myself, like, what if you, just for funsies, like, borrowed from the mafia, and then, like, they're like, you better pay back in a week. And then you just sat on the money, didn't do anything with it,
and then you
paid them back? Would they be like, oh, okay. Well, no, like, can you...
the interest, the VIG.
Well, so,
that's
like,
where they get you.
But, I mean, does interest immediately accrue?
Yeah.
Do you have... Oh, okay, all right. Well, yeah, I guess that's stupid.
From the second you take it, it starts... The clock starts ticking, and that's...
But like, let's say, just for funsies, you also set aside some money, like you for the VIG. So you're basically paying to take this money
to hang out with Tony Soprano.
I'm just saying, like, what if you're the one guy who's like establishing a good line of credit with the loan sharks? Like, that guy's cool. You'll probably get something out of that relationship.
My mafia credit score is 795.
I'm just saying, I've always thought about it as something like, because then you get to hang out with loan sharks and they're probably like chilling.
Well, that's what all of the Deuce was about. You know, you had one James Franco who had really good mafia credit, and then another James Franco had really poor mafia credit.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. But
in 20 years, we're going to do a Deuce podcast because that show is amazing.
I love that show.
Yeah, it is a really, really good show.
No one watched it.
No one watched The Wire when The Wire happened either.
Yeah, but then The Wire picked up, and I don't see the same thing happening with The Deuce.
I think it'll eventually happen, but it is also a ridiculously short series. What was it, like three seasons or something?
Yeah.
So it's not going to – I don't think it's going to – first of all, I mean, compared to The Wire, I don't think it compares. I think it's good.
Nothing compares to The Wire.
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of the rewatch capacity, I mean, we'll see. But I did love it. I thought it was really good. What about Show Me a Hero? This is another good David Simon show.
Yeah, more boring. I think The Deuce is better.
Yeah.
The Deuce is, you know why?
Was amazing.
So much more titties.
So many
That's
more
true.
Titties. There
no
was titties on Show Me a Hero.
And how many James Francos were there in Show Me a Hero? Not
zero.
Not a one.
Zero. Yeah, but there was one Oscar Isaac.
That's true.
But he wasn't like hot Oscar Isaac. They made him uglier.
If they,
do you see those Dune picks? Those Dune Oscar Isaac picks are nice.
I know. He's nice with it. Like that fucking beard, dude.
Oscar Isaac playing quadruplets, there you go. That's a show. I'll green that one.
I'll green light that one right now.
Let's pitch it right now.
Let's go.
HBO.
Hey, we got four Oscar Isaacs. Buy a show.
All right, so let's talk about the other plot line in this, which is that Tony might be, he's more worried.
He might be going away for a while.
He thinks he's going to be going away for a while for Matt Bevilacqua's murder, but it seemed like the guy never had a positive identification anyway, right?
I mean, he had a positive identification. I thought it opens with a positive identification of Tony Soprano, but not of Pussy Pompancero.
Yeah.
So Big Pussy is ostensibly in the clear for this, which, by the way, makes Tony very suspicious. And I think it is, you know, there's a moment where Tony says, you know, I got identified and they came to me. Why didn't they come to you? And Pussy is like, oh, they will.
Yeah.
And Tony
Give
just shoots
time.
Him this. Yeah. When Tony shoots him that look, it's kind of like. It's subtle, but it does say to me that, like, he's putting the pieces together.
Now, do you think that, like, we've been complaining about the Big Pussy being a snitch storyline being basically like the worst storyline of the least interesting,
dragged out,
the most compelling storyline of the last like three or four episodes.
Sure.
And in this episode, like they started to sort of make me care again, I think.
Yeah, because I thought with this one, the reason that I cared more about this is, number one, he is actually not following through as much. Like, the fact that he didn't wear a wire and actually, you know, came to the, like, help murder Matthew Bevilacqua, you know, that kind of, like, gave some more depth to it. He wasn't, like, struggling, like, what am I going to do? And, like, freaking out, throwing a mirror and shit.
Yeah.
Like... and then also,
yeah, did he ever punch a mirror over this?
No, but he threw a mirror at his wife who, when he was in the bathroom shaving his chest, trying to put on a wire like a few episodes ago.
Oh, that's true. He's
like freaking out.
I mean, I just feel like anytime someone's having a personal crisis in a show or movie and they don't punch a mirror, that's like a brave narrative choice.
I just watched something. God, I forget what it was. Oh, God.
There's
damn
that scene
it,
in Dewey Cox where they just keep doing that over and over again. It's amazing.
Just a line of sinks that he destroys. Right.
incredibly underrated movie.
Oh,
the
most
Perfect
underrated.
Movie. It's like the last good comedy.
It really is. And it's the last good of that genre.
Say Popstar was pretty great too. But
that's true. That's
I keep hearing that, but I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, it's fucking good. But there was another movie or television show I watched recently where something happened, you know, to the protagonist or whatnot, and then he's in the bathroom, and I'm like, please don't break a mirror. Please don't break a mirror. Please don't break a mirror. And, like, he didn't for a while, and then he ends it with breaking the mirror, and I was like, over. I'm over this show.
Did you ever see Foxcatcher? I think Foxcatcher is, like, 90%. Channing Tatum punching mirrors or punching walls or hitting his head against walls. It's a lot. Yeah, of that.
But that's
it's the end of Twin Peaks too. Like that's how he figures out that he's still, you know, that, you gotta
break
coop.
A mirror. Yeah, I mean it's definitely it's cliche for sure, but yeah. So the pussy storyline I thought was redeeming itself a little bit in this one because of the fact that it was a little bit more subtle.
It was like, a little the plotting in this one was a little weird in that, you know, the witness kind of just comes out of nowhere. I mean, they were like in the middle of the night, right? I haven't been watching. I just watched this episode. But
yeah,
I
yeah. They were. It was in the middle of the night.
But and they don't set that up, right? In the previous episode, that there was a guy watching. It's just like he just appears. And then he IDs Tony Soprano. And then later, his wife's like, what are you, like, you know?
Yes.
And he's like, oh, shit, it's Tony Soprano. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he didn't, they knew who he was, but he didn't know who he was.
Well,
but
it's like,
it's a little weird.
He knew what he saw, which was that he heard what he thought was firecrackers, and then he looked out, and he saw Tony Soprano, we didn't know it was Tony, but he was able to identify what the guy looked like, and an accomplice. You know, getting out to look at that and not know it was the mafia is kind of weird.
Yeah. It's like two fat Italian guys.
Yeah, it's like
not to be racist, you know? Like,
yeah, yeah. He's like, this was some sort of like crack deal, wasn't it? And they're like,
they were
sure.
Both about 5'8" and 240 to 270.
Yeah, it's weird that he wouldn't automatically assume that's what it is. But I will say that snitch, that flag-waving motherfucker, as they called him.
The depiction of the flag-waving motherfucker.
Well, it's amazing. Did you guys notice the book he was reading?
Yes.
It's Anarchy, State, and Utopia by Robert Nozick.
Yeah. It's the libertarian Bible.
Yeah.
It's
so
amazing.
This is,
Best guy ever.
This is my favorite scene. If we're doing favorite, least favorite,
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
My favorite was the scene where the snitch and his wife are sitting listening to maybe the most pretentious piano music ever.
I honestly
ever
thought when I was watching it last night, I thought it was coming from like outside. I was like, it fits so weird in the episode.
It is just, it's the dumbest song ever. So apparently it's the second movement from Anton Webern's Variations for Piano, Opus 27.
Wow.
So he's sitting, they're listening to the worst music while he reads Anarchy, State, and Utopia. And I have a clip of it just because everything about this scene is perfect in terms of like displaying what a libertarian, I don't want to say yuppie, I'm trying to think because they're not young. What's the word for them?
They're like preppy.
I think yuppie's kind of, fine. I think yuppie
yuppie's fine. It's like
but they're older. It's they're boomer elitist fucking, I don't know. The only word that comes
they're
to
like
mind
bow tie assholes, you know?
Yeah, bow tie
cosplay.
I think of
as like, you know, like they would like fancy themselves like a general in World War II or something.
Yeah, the word that comes to mind is Connecticut, and I don't know why. Mm-hmm. I've never been
Connecticut normies.
Connecticut normies in King Tony's court. All right. I have a clip. It's called Fave Scene, a flag waving motherfucker and wife.
I feel like this scene in the script started with cut two, interior, a flag waving motherfucker's house. Yeah. All right. So here's the clip. Like, that's music that someone would listen to on purpose?
Like, you're a psychopath.
Yeah, it's literally like, just have a child and just say, hey, could you just like smash some keys for a while?
It sounds like a cat just felt like was running across the piano.
Yeah.
Like, someone wrote that on staff paper. Yeah. What's the first movement like? That's the second one? What is the first?
Yeah.
It can't be worse.
That's the bowel movement, if you ask me.
Hey.
Spinal tap, but classical.
Yeah, very good.
The classical version of shit sandwich. Anyway.
Oh, my God. Please, God, no.
What the hell is it?
The victim has now further been identified as Matthew Bevilacqua, a soprano family associate.
Fuck, give me that. Officials close to the investigation are keeping tight-lipped as it may involve a high-ranking mafia member.
Oh my God.
Where's that detective's number?
On the fridge.
Those lying cocksuckers. Where on the fridge?
On the fridge, on the fridge!
Where on the fucking fridge?
Oh, I knew it! I knew it! But you let me be the big man!
She even has that accent, like the pretentious, like, you had to be the big man. Like, yeah, you know, it's like a Katharine Hepburn type of thing.
Yeah,
she
saw a Katharine Hepburn movie and was just like, oh, yeah, this is what I'm going to model my fucking vocal cords after. You had to be the big man! Like, that, it was just... You got even the fucking like random one scene actors in The Sopranos deserve an Emmy.
Oh, yeah. That like, is a real masterclass for any writer in just, you know, making your minor throwaway characters like thoroughly detestable in a very familiar
well,
way.
Because, and that's like key, right? Because like he's actually like doing the right thing, you know?
Yeah.
Like, right. He's doing his civic duty by trying to ID a murderer, you know, like going to the cops and shit. But like they make him so hateable that you root against him and you want Tony to get away with it. You know, like you got to make him somehow worse.
Yeah.
Tony Soprano, it's... who's ruining this man's life.
He was about to get
his
shot.
His college fund.
He was about to get capped by the invisible hand of the market. And
yeah, it's just one of those scenes that like can exist at any point in The Sopranos, and it's just like it's standalone brilliance.
Yeah.
Everything about it, just like so rich in detail about why you hate this person, who is ostensibly the only good character on the show, as far as we know.
Like the writer's room, it's like, how do we make a guy who's worse than a mafia kingpin who just murders people left and right? It's like
make him a libertarian.
I mean, I do like that, like the underpinning of most people in the mafia is just thorough disdain for the working man. Same with Goodfellas.
Yep.
It's just like it's all grounded by thinking everyone else is a complete sucker and a rube.
Yeah. It's anyway. I mean, it was just I was thinking about my least favorite scene, and I realized that at this point for this episode, I would have to just kind of choose. Like every scene in this, if I were to choose it, I think it would make someone mad because there's something redeeming about pretty much everything.
This didn't have any bad scenes. I would say there was one bad moment.
What was your least favorite moment?
My least favorite moment is when Richie Aprile brings up the fucking jacket again, because it's just like a callback to that terrible episode and that terrible, stupid Seinfeldian plot line about the fucking jacket. Like, they have so much more better, bigger drama, and he's still thinking about the fucking jacket? Get out of here.
But that scene is incredible. Like,
oh, yeah.
That scene is so memorable overall. I mean,
absolutely.
The sex, like the Richie Aprile pointing the gun at Janice's head while begging, and then getting interrupted by Olivia just coming down the stairs on the mechanized thing.
Are you smoking marijuana?
it's so perfect.
So one outstanding, I mean, I think I have a good answer for this, but the one outstanding question from that scene is like, whose idea, whose kink was that,
right,
to have him pointing the gun at her head while they screw? Was it Richie's or was it Janice's?
She mentions it, that it's like, I'm doing it how you like, baby. You know, like,
yeah.
It seems like
and he,
but she also says she's turned on by powerful men and she has no regrets about
it. I think Janice, she's playing between him and Ralphie doesn't, is she the one that sticks Ralphie with the dildo?
Yes.
Yeah. Like she seems to like be an expert at, you know, safely men. Asking what the kink is, like the dirtiest kink that there's some guy has that she wants to please and then doing it, you know?
Right. She's definitely like, she's at the very least treated by men in a way where they feel safe enough with her.
Right.
Like maybe it's because her name used to be Parvati. But they feel her as being open-minded enough to be trusted with information. Like,
right.
I like to stick a gun to women's heads.
So you think that was Richie's kink?
Yeah, I do.
I interpreted that 100% as Janice's kink.
Because he specifically says,
that's not how it works. Yeah.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah, when she starts going into all of the stuff that he doesn't like being called the boss, and it should
you
be
should
you.
Be the boss.
Yeah, he says that's not part of it, yeah, which like, I interpreted as like, listen, the way it works is I stick a gun to your head, and I fuck you and pretend you're a dude in prison, because there's a theory that we have that our previous guest, Shireen Eunice, kind of like posited, which is that Richie might be in the closet.
Ooh.
And there's a lot of just little breadcrumbs leading.
Yeah.
There's like a trail of clues that he might be. Okay. And I do think this fits a little bit into it, being that it just seems so strange.
Yeah. So I disagree with you because of what you said about powerful men, but I think a bigger question I have based on this scene is are the screenwriters blaming Tony's personality on the fact that he's surrounded by terrible women? Because Janice is like when Junior talks about her as a 10-year-old girl, like stealing money from his wallet, like she's basically like bad from the beginning. And there's really no origin story for why Livia is terrible, but you can definitely, it's definitely setting up the foundation of Tony's psyche is that he seems to be surrounded by, you know, the terrible
by women who want to kill
like
him.
It's like the Yoko
trope. I think Tony and Janice are both victims of Livia, like, right? Livia's the great monster.
Right.
She's the great villain, right, in the early seasons especially.
Right.
And Tony and Janice, just it manifests differently for, like, a man and a woman.
Sure.
But, like, the mommy issues are with both of them. I mean, like, Janice is trying to cosplay as Livia, as, like, a woman who, like, behind the scenes can manipulate the powerful man. You know, because, like, that was, like, Livia's whole thing. Like, she is like as much of a don as anyone else.
Right.
Just Janice just doesn't quite have it. Like she's not as.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they being set up as equal to Tony in that they manipulate, but they just do it in different ways? Or are they an explanation for Tony, I guess is the question.
I don't see it as much as like when you talk about it being women in general are written as kind of the Yokos. It seems to be very focused on the women in the Soprano family.
Yeah.
As opposed to like, let's say like Dr. Melfi or even Carmela. Right. So, I don't really see it as being like all of the women in the show are kind of like trying to kill Tony. It seems to be very much focused on like, The Sopranos are a family of people who try
fucked up people.
And yeah. I think, Nando, that you're right. It is based on the fact that, like, you know, they were raised by Livia Soprano, who is a monster. Yeah.
And the dad was, like, basically absent. I mean, even Carmela makes, like, a line about it in this episode. She's like, I read in whatever magazine that...
It was Time Magazine.
Yeah, Time Magazine. Like, yeah, Time Magazine, that absent fathers are very bad for the child's, like, blah, 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 blah. They can't express their frustrations and all that, you know.
I read that absent fathers turn their children into Tony Sopranos. It's very strange.
It's basically what she tells him.
Yeah,
and he doesn't even like it. Doesn't even register with him. He's just like he's gotta become a street smart. Someone's gotta tell him street smart. Yeah. Like he's not even listening to her.
My wife is yapping again.
Yeah,
but yeah, I mean, Headed back real quick to Richie and Janice's sexual kinks. I have a clip from their sexual intercourse.
Fun.
That in which she is talking about him being the boss. And
I got it.
Vince, why don't you play that?
Oh, Richie. Oh, Richie. Oh, baby, you're the boss. Oh, you're the boss. Oh, you're the boss. Oh, baby. Oh, you're the best. Oh, it should be you. Oh, it should be you. Oh. What?
That's not part of it.
This so is like the
That's the theme song from Who's the Boss.
Oh,
and here's
was it? Was it really? I missed that.
Yeah, so even when I was creating that clip, which took so long, I was like, I don't recognize this theme song like at all, but someone will and will very much enjoy this joke.
This is like that Simpsons episode where Homer learns to video edit. Like that's you when with audio editing, where Lisa's like, you know, there
it's
are
all
other
star wipes.
There are other transitions besides star wipes.
Yeah, I pretty much am. This is a star wipe podcast. This is the way I like to look at it. It's all star wipes because you know if you're gonna fucking go for it, you gotta go for the gold.
Yeah,
and there's nothing better than a star wipe. I thought that the Janice storyline, when it comes to her relationship with Richie, is really now getting into where everyone kind of knew it was going, which is like she is now pretty much directly, you know, trying to instruct Richie that he should.
She's trying to Lady Macbeth him.
Yeah, exactly. She's trying to Lady Macbeth him, like trying to Livia Soprano him, really.
Yeah.
And like in this case, Richie is Junior, and trying to get him to kill Tony, which is, you know, it's a sick fucking family. They really are. You know, they do all need therapy. I get why it's a show about mobsters going to therapy. But yeah, there is that interesting moment in which Junior, who has been through this before with Sopranos, trying to suggest subtly that they should maybe murder one of their kin.
Mm-hmm.
So he's been
in
through
my
this
own
before.
Home. That's my nephew, goddammit.
Yeah, and gives issues a little bit of a warning to Richie Aprile, which I have for you.
This fucking guy was supposed to be laid on a Midland Avenue a year ago. I know it, and you know it.
Let me tell you who's not a good kid. That niece of mine. I left my brother's house one night, and my wallet was light. I'm talking about a 10-year-old girl here, Richie. Word to the wise, that's all I'm saying.
I like that because, you know, Junior's trying to act. He's trying to play, like, the moral high card, and Richie's like, hey, bro, you're the one who tried to whack him in the first place.
Yeah, exactly. And also, you know, Junior in, I mean, the most roundabout way possible without just saying, you know, his mother tried to get me to kill him and that didn't work out too well. So maybe watch out where you're getting these ideas from. Without saying that, he basically is just like, you know, this niece of mine stole from me once, so maybe don't listen to her. And it is, it's interesting because it's like, it actually shows like a little bit of, he's learned his lesson a little bit, which is that, you know, if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Well, the other dynamic that exists there is that like Junior is doing something that a lot of these mobsters do, is that they convince themselves that their choices are, that they did nothing wrong. You know, like in his mind, you know, he like his decision to try to whack Tony was justified, and he doesn't even like remember it that way. Mm-hmm. Even like when Tony later on in the episode, he's like, I did nothing wrong, by the way, you know, for something I didn't do to Dr. Melfi, you know, and he probably believes that. He's like, he just murdered Monty Bevilacqua, but he probably believes that.
Yeah. He's like, I did nothing wrong. It's the same reason why in that episode, he's like, no, I don't go to hell. Only rapists and cannibals go to hell, which is like, the fact that he brought up cannibals means like, he's like, don't say murderers. Right. Don't say, you know, like this dude. Yeah. He absolutely believes that he did nothing wrong. Not that murder murder is not wrong if it's in service of revenge or money or business. Like, this dude can pretty much justify any of the bullshit that he's ever pulled. And yeah, and I think that's true of all these, like, mobsters. They're sociopaths.
Yeah. So, Matt, I thought you had an interesting question from this episode about Beansy. We haven't talked about the Beansy scene.
Yeah,
where Tony's trying to pay Beansy $50,000.
Well, yeah, it's
not really. Like, that's the weird part about it.
Well, that's so. This is the question that I have: is that this scene? What follows or previous to the scene is Tony Soprano leaving therapy right after. This is right after he realizes that, like, the witness has decided to recant, and, you know, oh, I don't know what I saw, and he's feeling really good. He leaves therapy because he's like, you know what? Today is a good day. I know I'm not going to prison. And then he immediately goes to Beansy and has $50,000 to give him that he wants Beansy to give to charity.
Did he really want him to give it to charity, or was he just saying that because Beansy didn't want to take it?
I don't know. I'm not sure. Like, why does Beansy have to take the money? Why does he have to give it to charity? Well, and why does Beansy not want to take the money? I'm confused by this whole scene.
Well, because you don't want to, like, it's like a flex, and you don't want to owe anything. I mean, he doesn't owe that money, but he, like, you know what I mean? Like, you always owe that. I mean, that's how, like, the mob, like, keeps their hooks into you, is like, you kind of constantly owe them.
Yeah. But
yeah, so, oh, that's interesting.
I also feel like it's one of those movie moves where, you know, it's kind of like the punching the mirror thing, where there's always the scene where it's like, I don't want your dirty money. And in my mind, I'm always like, you know, if you give me dirty money, I'm going to use it for good things. So it's going to cease to be dirty money anyway. I will absolutely take anyone's dirty money and, you know, I'll spend it in a good way, which is to make my life better.
But you're very easily corruptible, Vince.
Matt, it's like an exaggerated version of what you were talking about earlier, that Tony wants to feel magnanimous, right? Like, it's like he basically has to threaten Beansy's life in order to take the money. He's like, he doesn't say it, but he, like, looks at him like, dude, you fucking take
you got to take this money. Yeah, exactly what I was thinking. I was like, it's possible that he's feeling really, really good right then. Yeah. And so he's like, you know what? I'm going to do something magnanimous. And then as soon as he tries it, the person who he's trying to do the favor for doesn't want to take the money. And he's like, if you don't do this high that I'm running on of everything's going to be all right and I'm actually a really good person and that's why everything worked out for me, is going to be gone. Yeah. So you have to take this money or I'll fucking kill you.
And Tony's face when he's walking away after that scene, like, he looks so self-satisfied. Like, he's smiling.
I did a good thing today.
I did the best thing ever. And Beansy's, like, fucking terrified. I mean, Beansy, like, knows the game. He knows that if you accept $50,000 from Tony Soprano, there's always strings attached.
Right. In this case, you know, the strings are going to be that, you know, whatever pull he has, whatever kind of favors he's able to do, he's going to have to basically, he's still in the life, despite the fact that he can never walk again. So let's move on to the final B story, Carm Bus in Bed. And that's that is surrounding the character who is Davy's wife's brother. So Davy's brother-in-law, Victor Musto. Victor Musto, mucho busto, I wrote for some reason. So he's bonded, state certified, and still dangerous. And he's a widower.
He's a husky man.
He's a husky man with beautiful blue eyes, and a widower whose late wife had a hostile womb.
Again, and, like, great casting, because in the same way that AJ's body looks like a young Tony, David's body looks like a more fit and conventionally attractive version of Tony's. Like, he's still kind of stocky. Like, he seems like the guy, he seems like exactly the kind of guy who would get Carmela's rocks off.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, he's basically
big, he's husky.
Yeah.
He's Tony Soprano. If Tony Soprano, didn't have you know, his life on Easy Street, yeah, you know, yeah. If he took like a square job and like with his education and his skills, he would be a guy who owns a really good like roofing business.
And he's a little more sensitive. He's like, he's doing a blue collar job, but he's also like interior decorator adjacent.
Well, he's yeah. also like, he's also kind of like, he's like, he's kind of, you know how Tony Soprano was like, whatever happened to the strong silent type, you know, like yes. Gary Cooper, you know, like Tony Soprano sees himself that way, even though he's like not that at all. He's
right.
like a narcissistic, selfish, you know,
yeah,
this guy
yeah.
is kind of like the strong silent type, you know, like he's kind of like a noble, yeah. you know, blue collar guy down to earth, you know,
who's yeah, yeah, a widower. Like, and right. I mean, he's clearly, you know, he's not trying to burden anyone with any of his problems. But at the same time, he's also got that he's definitely manipulative in that in the way that flirting is manipulative.
Yeah, he wants to smash.
He wants to smash. Yeah. He's trying to bust. And
Gary
so,
Cooper wanted to smash, too. Come on.
That's the thing. That's why you're strong and silent, because that way you can bust
more.
It's
a way to smash.
Yeah. They're strong and silent. They're strong smash. And silent right until the point where they bust and they get really yeah. loud. That's the
yeah,
funny
yeah,
thing.
Yeah.
Ah! Ah! Oh! Loud. Yeah.
They're strong and silent until they get loud and weak. Okay, so we gotta.
Ow! 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 It hurts.
stupid. So, this is an interesting storyline for Carm because of the fact that Carm is. You know, she's dealing with the fact that Tony is completely emotionally absent because he's dealing with some shit that she has no idea about, the fact that he might be going to prison for murdering Matthew Bevilacqua. And she and him get into, I think, the first physical fight that I've yeah. seen them get into on the show. I mean, maybe I always say that and then it turns out a few episodes ago the thing happened, but yeah, like you know, so she's frustrated with him and she's horny and she meets Vic and he's sweet, he's like husky, he's strong, and
he wants to smash as much as she does.
Yeah, and they have this amazing scene,
so well directed, you know, that whole storyline.
Oh, it's wonderfully directed, and like just the way that as soon as they enter that one room that she wants to show him, which is number one, her plan definitely to be alone with him because she closes the door.
Oh, yeah.
And then also like they're so close together. There's that like claustrophobic feeling where you're just like they have to kiss. You yeah. know, if you
it's not their fault.
It's like basically the director's version of like pushing two women's heads together and trying to make them kiss. He basically is like, everyone get in this small room and they'll definitely kiss. And she is, God damn it, Edie Falco is like one of the best actors ever.
Oh, yeah.
Because her, like just that moment right before the kiss where she just says, Jesus. And yeah. like, she knows. That. She just nailed it. It's just like that feeling of like, oh, here we go. I'm about to cheat. And it did feel like...
Just glistening.
Yeah. Cool. I mean...
We also get the, you know, in the Carm storyline, the Andrea Bocelli...
Which
is like the... That means Carmela's horny. She wants to...
Yeah. yeah, yeah.
That's what that song means in The Sopranos.
Yeah,
And in my life, too.
Yeah, no, seriously. If I hear Conte Partiro, I'm just like, ooh, baby.
Like Marvin Gaye.
Not me. Conte Partiro, and I got blood in my boner. That just puts it right up in there. I need a blind man singing about love. It is like, it's a really passionate scene, and it does a lot without doing too much, you know, because it's just this like incredibly passionate kiss. And you're kind of rooting for her in the schoolgirl type way where you're just like this relationship. Because you don't wish harm upon Vic, but you know what would happen if this were to continue. And it does seem like it's going to, up until the point where Vic pulls Davey aside and Davey admits that he's been busted out by the mob and by Tony Soprano specifically. And that's when basically Vic is like, fuck that. You know, for some reason, he wasn't worried about Tony Soprano before, probably because he didn't really know who he was.
Yeah.
But which
it's when he saw like how ruthless he could be with David that he was like, oh, shit, this guy doesn't fuck around. He's not like,
Yeah, I guess so. I guess it was like, he was like, oh, I mean, I knew he was in the mafia, but I didn't know that he was mean. Like, right. it was like this weird thing where he's just like, all right, maybe I shouldn't have an affair with his wife. But you do feel bad for Carm, because she really, like, she even says, you know, I don't know if, you know, I haven't felt this way in a long time, maybe ever. And you're just like, damn, like... Yeah.
Well, it's like Tony ruined it without even knowing it, you know,
yeah.
Without knowing he did, you know, like he didn't even know what was happening and he stopped it without him, you know, yeah. Just by existing.
Someone, you know, seeing the wreckage that he's caused in other people's lives and going, I'm going to steer clear. I'm not going to do that. And therefore, Carm has to continue having dreams where I imagine she's getting plowed. by a guy who does wallpaper. Sure. And
he's hitting the back walls.
Yeah, he's hitting them back. He's wallpapering them back walls. Oh my God. It leads me to
applying adhesive to the back walls.
Yeah. All right. Leads me to my final question about this episode. In the scene where Meadow and Tony is drunk and he's worried about possibly going to prison, and Meadow comes home, and Meadow wants to go up to her room because she's going to go to a chat room.
Yeah, it's amazing. I was like, couldn't stop laughing when I saw that. It's like, Dad, I got an appointment with my fucking chat room.
I've got an appointment with a chat room, which, by the way, that leads me to my favorite segment on the show. Vince, I hope you're ready with the bumper. Oh. It's the 90s.
It's the 90s. So parents are supposed to discuss sex with their children. It's the 90s. It's the 90s. You're my butterfly,
sugar. 90s. Now, that is just perfect.
That's great.
Just for the bumper. Occasionally, I make a good bumper, Nando. So, she wants to go to a chat room. and I just am wondering, like, because I was online... in my family by around 2001. So I kind of missed the
That's
era
late.
Of, yeah, it's late.
Yeah,
I missed the era of
late.
Yeah, seriously.
All right. You know what? We just didn't have a computer. So my mom had a computer that had Windows 95, but I remember in like 2001, it was like right before 9/11. Nice. We got
best
like
time to be online.
Yeah, we got a Dell.
9/11 ruined the internet.
It really did.
I mean, as soon as I logged on the internet, I was like, oh, perfect, because all I really wanted this for was porn and beheading videos. So I got those in spades. But I missed the era of like heavy chat room use. Like I used AIM, but I was never really like a chat room person.
Oh, I was into the chat rooms were like a revelation. If
so, what,
you know,
what was
if
going
you were
on?
In- super lonely and lived in the country, and you were about you didn't have a driver's license yet.
Yeah,
you just like literally logged into chat rooms to chat with random people. It was so stupid, and yet it was like I was like obsessed with it because you know.
But
like
did you
14.
Make an? I understood it for like if you're talking to strangers, you get in the chat room, you talk to strangers. Would you do a thing where you had an appointment with friends?
yeah. Sometimes there would be like group chats. Like AIM kind of group chats, but I don't know if that's what she's talking about in this, but like I do remember like being in like, you know, a 4-person group chat on AIM or whatever, but the chat rooms, I don't know, whenever I went on a chat room, it was always like with a friend of mine and we were always like trying to get naked pics.
Yeah. Right.
Like,
exactly.
People would send you and they would tell you that it was them, you know, but it was like some old guy, you know, like just like finding pictures online and then sending to you.
Which leads me to my next question was, do you think she's in that chat room like sending pussy pics?
For sure.
No, but for Hunter, sure, right? Hunter definitely was.
Well, Hunter for sure. She's a little slut.
Did you notice the posters in her room in this episode of the
Johnny Lang and
it's
Hole.
So random.
Yeah.
Like Johnny other... Lang was that was so
people
was
thought
to
Johnny
me.
Lang was gonna be a thing for like a month.
I was just thinking about Johnny Lang before watching this episode. I was just like, whatever happened to that guy? Like he was like there was a thing where because he was hot and he was like a blues musician.
Yeah, he was like a really good guitar player.
And I just think about that and I'm just like nothing happened, and yet they still took a chance with John Mayer, and it worked out.
Right.
You know, it's just like, I mean, Johnny Lang's probably fine. He's probably, you know, doing like state fairs and kind of like theater shows. I bet he could fuck up a theater, but you know, I
those he's blues guys, they still sell out. Everybody wants the blues every now and then. They don't care where they get it.
Yeah, you just go to a small blues club. But the other 90s shit going on was, of course, Carm was reading Memoirs of a Geisha, yes. Which is a fucking awful book.
If you guys have ever... I like that book.
I haven't reread it.
Memoirs of a Geisha?
I haven't reread it like in the last 10 years, but I remember really liking it.
Okay, so I didn't read it. I saw the movie, and it's one of the worst movies I've ever seen. And as I was watching it, I was like, this feels like it was written by a white man, and it turns out that it was, and apparently Memoirs of a Geisha got into some legal trouble based on the fact that a lot of the story was taken directly from someone else who was an actual
he definitely would have been canceled like in 2020.
He's canceled as fuck. Yeah. Like
it was actually a stolen memoir of a geisha.
Right. And so the real geisha,
it is actual cultural appropriation. It's like literal.
Yeah, culture. It's like literally appropriating a culture. It's not even. Yeah, exactly. So the real geisha who the fake memoir was based on wrote a real memoir, and apparently it's very good.
The real geisha.
They should make that movie. You know, like the real memoirs of a geisha.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just a porn.
The gritty remake. Oh yes,
hell yeah, dude! I would watch that shit. Also, another very 90s reference at the very beginning. He's hanging out in a mall, and also just kind of there's like a lot of references to malls. At one point, AJ talks about going to the mall, and he's like, "What do you do at the mall?"
Yeah,
he's like, "I don't know. We just hang out, and eat food." Yeah. He was like, "Yeah, it goes to Mrs. Fields and shit like that." He's like, "So you men and women hanging out together, just going to the mall?"
In my day, we hung out with my cousin Richie in his car, and we shouted at women from the car like real men.
You shout at women, and then you put firecrackers in a frog's asshole.
The other like super 90s thing was just the fact that David Scatino has like an independent sports store.
Yeah,
you know, that's what I mean?
Like,
true.
You know, like they don't exist anymore. Now it's like giant chains.
Yeah, it wasn't a sports chalet. The fact that it wasn't means it was very 90s. And also, when he's at the mall, he tells Richie Aprile, I went over to Brookstone and got myself a scale.
So good.
Which I want to do a remix. I want to do a remix of the theme song. Went over to Brookstone, got myself a scale. Anywho,
before we wrap this up, I feel we're going long, but we do have a voicemail before we get out of here.
Oh, ooh. Yeah. Well, we also have just two real quick more segments.
We don't have to go through every segment like we have
just
to do.
Just blow
through them.
Let's just blow through them real quick.
It's not a checklist.
Quick. The Real Gangster, it is a checklist. I worked very hard on this.
Okay.
Give
me your checklist.
Nothing.
Give me your The Real Gangster.
The Real Gangster is gambling addiction, mothers, monogamy, Janice, and the actual mafia. In terms of Gaba Vafangul, because we have a new Stevie B, dude.
All right.
The words that I heard were Agita, which was apparently
Agita.
Just an Agita.
I don't think that's Italian. I think that's
it
just
is.
A word. Is
no,
it?
It's Italian. I looked it up. It was Italian for heartburn. At one point, Tony calls AJ. He says, "Hey, Gagoots." And I said, "What is that word? I wonder if Stevie B." And guess what? Stevie B, he's got the Italian-American translation for us.
Hey, how you all doing? I'm Stevie B. And the Italian-American slang word of the day is Gagoots. Gagoots. White Bread Philly's been having a lot of problems with his car. Tells me he's going to take it over to the neighborhood shop, Louis. I say to him, not for nothing, but Louis has a mechanic. He's a bit of a go-goats. Medigan. My employee, Philip, has been experiencing a lot of trouble with his automobile. He says to me he's going to take it down to the local mechanic shop, Louis, for repair. I say to him, although Lewis is a nice man, as a mechanic, he's totally useless. Go-goats!
I love Stevie B so fucking much.
One of our best Americans.
Oh, he's one of our best. At some point, I hope to have him on the podcast. I hope you're still alive, dude. COVID's pretty bad. So be careful, Stevie B. So yeah, I learned a new word. Googlets. Useless.
Googlets.
All right. So now we have a voicemail, do we, Vin?
We sure do. I have not vetted it because we don't do that. We just play them as they come.
Exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. Just like chat see what happens. Hell yeah.
Hey, Matt and Vince. This is David from Queens. First time caller, long time listener. I think that might be the wrong way around. Pod Yourself a Gun. Love the podcast. Love the theme song. Just finished listening to From Here to Eternity with Emily Fleming. Great episode. Couple notes. With the psychic, you guys are wrong. It's definitely just real. It's canon in the Sopranos universe that Catholicism is real. Whatever the reality might be in real life. Also, I really loved when when Emily was too mad about Edie Falco's bangs to even respond to the "it's the 90s" thing. All right, that's it. Have a good one, guys.
It's fair.
Hell
she's got,
yeah,
she's got bad bangs. I mean,
she does.
Not
she
wrong.
Is. She has very bad bangs. Yeah, and Emily was right to point it out. Those are kind of an anomaly in terms of bangs hairstyles. Like, no one really ever recreated Edie Falco's bad bang. So yeah, thanks for the voicemail, and we encourage all of our listeners to leave us voicemails that we will, you know, completely not vet and just play and see what happens.
Yeah.
In this case, we were lucky, nobody said any racial slurs, so we consider that a good day. All right, well, I think it's time to wrap this bad boy up. Nando, thank you so much for coming on this podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Is there anything you'd like to plug? Where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me mostly on Twitter at Nando Arvila, Instagram Nando Arvila, I guess, if you're into that. Listen to the Entourage podcast. Let's pot it out, an Entourage podcast.
Let's pot it out. Yeah. And let us know when you start having guests, because we would love
love to have you guys.
I would love to rewatch that show. I really enjoyed it when I first watched it.
It's an interesting rewatch, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine rewatching it in 2020 context. But,
it's very jarring.
I'm going to have to check it out. Frogcast@gmail.com. That's where you can email us with any of your questions, comments, concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks so much for listening. And until next episode, don't stop believing. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, wait. Did you guys notice that the end of this episode was also a Journey song? The wheel in the sky keeps on turning.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.